So, good evening and welcome to the meditation hall for our retreat. Can everyone hear okay? So, so this is the more formal welcome to your retreat. And I want to say a few more things about the being at the retreat and logistics, and then introduce the theme for the retreat. Then we'll do the refuges and the precepts. Somewhere in there we'll give you a chance to ask some questions if you now that you've been here for a few hours. Maybe the things you need to ask, would like to ask. And then hopefully we might be able to finish in here by 8:30 and go to bed early if you're able to, or stay up late meditating if you'd like. So we have these chairs that some of you are sitting in, and it looks like there's a fair number not being used. The you know, different chairs work for different bodies. So if these chairs aren't comfortable for you, you're welcome to bring any chair up into meditation hall from elsewhere. The black chairs that some people find very comfortable in the dining room, they can be brought up, or maybe you have them in your room. It's probably better to bring it out there. There are more of these chairs that were out in the lobby upstairs. And some of those wonderful turquoise chairs down in the community room, some people find those to be really comfortable, the best chairs for them. And you can bring those up here. And one retreat, we even brought the big, easy chair that Richard and I sat in, the thrones, turquoise thrones. And if that's what works best for you, we'll bring it up here for you. So just, you know, whatever works for you in terms of chairs. And to our surprise, the evening dishwashers this evening found they had a lot of work to do with the dishes. And perhaps what happened was, at least one of the things that happened was that maybe it wasn't, you didn't understand that the system of dishwashing here is such that each person has to actually wash their dishes thoroughly themselves, like you would at home. Because the dishwasher is not a dishwasher. It's what's called a sanitizer. So you have to make sure there's no food particles left on, you know, scrape it and put in the, you know, bottom and the top and everything. And once it's thoroughly cleaned, then you put the plates and the cups or whatever into the tub behind you, and then the people who are manning the dishwasher, they can just take a clean dish and put it in the racks and slide it through the sanitizer so it's sterile for us to use again. And so be sure you know, it's kind of a little bit, other places, you know, you don't, like Spirit Rock, you don't clean your own dishes, you just put them in there dirty and in the same kind of tub system. And in the morning, so it's 6:40 is this Sangha service period, 6:40 to 7. And the managers will be here for that in case you need to check in with someone about supplies, about your job, something's not clear about what you're doing. And especially Bruni will be kind of wandering around and checking in. If you see her, you can ask her. And I think Robert will be too. Will you still be here by then? You've gone by then. So maybe Diana will be here by then, and she knows. And then in the tomorrow, we'll do a series of things here. Richard will do the guided instruction in the morning for the basic meditation instructions for tomorrow. And then we'll do instructions for walking meditation. And then later in the morning, we'll give some instructions for those who would like on a meditation posture. Some of you might be somewhat new to them. Maybe you've never had instruction on posture. And so it's nice to get that at the beginning of retreat. And then when we finish in here this evening, then we'll be in what's called noble silence. It becomes a silent retreat. And so we ask that there's no conversation, unless you have some job or some important reason why you have to talk with the person you're working with and work something out. It's okay to, you know, if you have to, but the idea is for practicing in the context of a silent, socially silent, no conversations, no talking, because of the way in which it enhances and develops our capacity for mindfulness. So now that you've been here for a few hours, are there any more questions about being here that occurs to you, that something now that you would like to have answered? Anything about the place? It all seems pretty straightforward. Yes, Sydney. The silverware you should also scrub carefully, and especially the forks in between the thongs, you can brush it, you know. And then that you leave in the tub that's right in front of you, and they soak there. And then later, the dishwasher, the people pull it out of there. You don't put that in the tub on the other side. That's the dishwashing. And some point along the, maybe the fourth day or something, there's a dish that has melted cheese in it. And that day you have to be really thorough in cleaning off your plate, because this cheese kind of sticks to things. Okay. So it's been the custom so far in this last year for the retreats at IRC to have a theme to them, and it seems to work well to make a coherent kind of presentation of the practice that we do. And the theme that Richard and I will be doing is that of what's called in Pali, the ancient Buddhist language, Anapanasati, the mindfulness of breathing in and out. And this is an ancient practice, goes back to the Buddha apparently, of keeping the breathing, mindfulness of the breathing, at the center of practice. And while we're being focused on the breath and staying with the rhythm of breathing in, breathing out, when it's appropriate, become aware of a little bit wider range of what's going on in our experience. So to be able to open up to the different aspects of our life that are useful for being mindful of and negotiating the path of freedom, but to do it with a stability that breathing provides. It's kind of like having a ballast in a boat that keeps it steady. So we can keep ourselves steady with the breath. Having a primary focus like that helps to cut through or interrupt or to slow down the tendency for rumination, which I was delighted to see an article today in BBC online newspaper, news, that of a study in England where they studied, I think, some 38,000 people. And the result of this psychological study is that the primary predictor for mental stress, depression, and anxiety is rumination. And they said that the tendency to keep thinking about things over and over again. Rumination is what cows do, right? They take in, they eat the grass, they put it in that special belly, and then when they have time off, they regurgitate it up into the mouth and then they chew the grass. So we have this special belly somewhere in our brain, and we have our life experience as it goes in, and we just keep it there. And then, you know, when we don't have anything better to do, we regurgitate it, and then we chew it, and we chew it, and we chew it, and we chew it, and we chew it. And the cows are more efficient, but we keep doing it. And that tendency to keep repeating the same stories and thinking the same story, especially when they're negative, especially the article said when the self-blame is involved, is one of the leading causes, they think, of or predictors, at least, that people will have depression and anxiety. And they think is one of the leading kind of contributors to many people's psychological, mental challenges, mental, you know, problems they have. And what was interesting, the article said it in a little different way, but they said that um, it isn't your life events that causes the serious psychological stress for us, but rather is how we relate to those life events, how we think about them, and how we kind of regurgitate and ruminate around them. And so we have to be very careful with the, you know, how we're relating to whatever the life events we have. And the analogy that is, you know, I might think this stick, this striker, is a really important thing for a Dharma teacher to have. Every Dharma teacher should have a bell and a striker for the bell. And so my profession depends on having a really good striker. And so it's important for me to have it and not to lose it, not to have anyone steal it, like Richard shouldn't go home with it. And so I have to hold on to it really tight. And I'm so focused on the striker and what it means, and I keep thinking about the striker and what it means, I don't notice that how I'm holding the striker is I'm gripping it tight, and it hurts, and my hand's getting numb and falling asleep, and but because I'm so focused on the striker. But I can turn my attention away from the striker to how I'm holding it, and then I see that I'm holding it in a tight way, and in a way that's not so necessary, because, you know, also because I trust Richard, so I don't have to. So the idea being that so that we can have all kinds of content to our memories and our thoughts, but it's not the content and the memory of our experience which is that important in terms of our well-being and our freedom and our ease in our life, but rather how we hold those thoughts and those memories and those plans for the future, and to learn to relax, and to learn to kind of to cut through them or interrupt them, so we're not repeating the stories over and over again, not living in the storytelling mind. So for some people, focusing on the breath is a way of stepping away from the stories, stepping away from the commentary, stepping away from the interpretations, stepping away from the ruminations that we do. And then to kind of try to stay with the breath and develop some concentration, some stillness, some quiet, by just staying with the breath, the simplicity of breathing. And then as we start getting kind of simpler, all the complications of our life and that our mental life gets, slowly we get simpler and simpler, like on a retreat like that, like this, then with time, our immediate experience begins opening up in ways that in this teaching of Anapanasati, it opens up, the teaching describes it in opening up in 16 ways, 16 steps. The 16 stages or steps of mindfulness of breathing. So that'll be the theme, going through these 16 steps that is ancient practice. We'll present it in the sequential way in which it's often done, and it works kind of nice as a kind of a unfolding that happens as we settle and relax and are fully here. But it doesn't have to, for any individual person, it doesn't have to be sequential. It's like a jewel that has 16 facets, 16 sides. And some of you might find that different facets of it are kind of what speak to you, what's relevant for you at any given time. I think both Richard and I like the theme of focusing on the breath because it's both a mindfulness practice and a concentration practice. And it brings together, wedges together these two wonderful qualities. Both of them need to be there for the deepening and unfolding of the practice. And it's very nice to kind of give some emphasis on this focal point that develops both. So to give some priority to that, an emphasis on that. We're very aware that some people don't use the breath as their primary object. And if that's the case for you, for some reason it doesn't work for you, or you have something else that works a lot better, you're welcome to practice the way you're accustomed to. And if you hear us say, you know, pay attention to the breath, you can just translate that to what you do. So don't feel like you have to do it what we're saying. But if you do it differently than how we're instructing, then when you have the meetings with us, it'd be really helpful. I think we would like you to come and explain to us what you are doing so we can support you and know where you are and stay in touch with what's going on with you so we can support the whole retreat and you as well. One of the things that's very nice you'll see about these 16 steps of breathing mindfully is there's an emphasis on relaxation as we do it. There's both this kind of, as you do it, relax and just emphasize relaxation. And you're going to have to decide how much you is useful for you to emphasize relaxation when you're here. For many people, it's more useful than not. Or how much you want to emphasize the alert qualities that are needed. So sometimes, and the balance of being relaxed and alert is a very important part of this practice. So it's possible that tomorrow, as I said, some of you will be tired, and maybe your mind is going to be, you know, wildly out of control. And it's sometimes in the beginning retreat, maybe relaxation can be overdone. We need to relax some parts of us, and other parts of us need more discipline, just coming back and a little bit more effort to kind of keep coming back. And where that balance is between relaxation and making kind of a diligent effort is a very personal thing. None of us can tell you what that should be, but that's kind of what we're negotiating, finding our way here. Because if you get too relaxed and fall asleep, that's not necessarily useful. Or if you're too relaxed and that means your mind just keeps wandering all over, that's not so useful either. So how to find this? So I think this Anapanasati, these 16 steps, weaves very nicely back and forth this balancing of the different factors. It presents very nicely the kind of certain kind of unfolding of what might happen and some of the things you might become aware of as you settle and into the retreat, settle into yourself as it goes along. And so we'll talk more about this as we go along, but that's the basic theme for the retreat. Yeah.
How's the volume on the, is this working? It's about right? Okay, thank you. So now we're going to, so if you're, some of you have a lot of retreat experience, know about taking refuges and precepts, heard it many times. A few people, when we went around the share, shared that I think a few people for whom it's the first retreat. So I'm going to say something about what the refuge is, what the precepts are. Just it can be very, very brief, just to give you the sense, and then we will take them together. And you'll see how that works. So the first is this refuges. And so when we reflect on what is a refuge, it's a place of it's a place of shelter, safety, protection. And the idea from a Dharma perspective is, if we look at where most, it's a place where you're okay, right? Where you can be safe, where everything's okay. Well, how is it in, for most of us, most of the time, where are we looking for that place of okayness? Most of us, as you're not doing anything wrong, this just seems to be what human beings do, we look for it in circumstances, and that we want to have, I mean, isn't it true that you want to have more of the things, experiences, situations that you want in life, and you want to have less of those that you don't want, right? No one here is trying to have more unpleasant in your life and less of what you do want pleasant, right? And so that's okay, except as we all know, it's life has an unpredictable or unreliable aspect to it. And so if our well-being or our refuge is completely caught up in circumstances or having to have or not have certain experiences, then it's certainly it's unstable, it's a tenuous, it's not really that reliable of a refuge. And so what the Dharma is asking is, see if we can find something that's maybe a little more reliable. And I think what Gil was really named it in that about, can we start to, rather than our happiness or well-being being completely tied up in the nature of the experience, the Dharma is asking us to, this is an exploration, it's an inquiry, it's a journey to see, can we start finding a place, a refuge of well-being that's more about how are we relating to whatever is happening? Can we find a place of peace if you will, of equanimity, of happiness, of well-being in the face of the inevitable ups and downs of life? Is there something, a foundation or support that we can carry with us to meet the experience of our lives? And so that's the idea of these refuges from a Dharma perspective. So there are three refuges. They're sometimes called the three jewels, the triple gem, and they're the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And briefly, the Buddha, well, there was a man who lived. His name, that Buddha, that it means Bud, it's awakened, the awakened one. That's what it means. So traditionally, it's actually just in that there was this great person and he was this great teacher. Sometimes people think of the refuge also, I've heard it said, taking refuge in wakefulness itself. So you could hold it that way if you wished. Dharma actually has many meanings. I think what's important for us here, basically it's the teachings. It's also sometimes can be the truth of things or the way of things are. You could think of it like that, Dharma. And then Sangha is, well, this is our community, and we've already, I loved the gathering in the circle and just the sense of the support that we all are for each other, and how, I mean, it's just so beautiful in this center. I'm coming to realize, I mentioned I'm here, you know, for the first time in learning, and that we retreatants are putting on, are the cooks and are the managers, and so that's the support we are, and I'm really excited that tomorrow, Gil's got the breakfast prep, and that he and I are making the breakfasts, and I think it's pretty cool, and so and I'm pretty excited about it, and so that's that support that we all are as community. So that's the idea of the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha as refuges. So what I would like to do then is just a traditional chant in Pali, and let's do it call and response. Some of you are familiar, but for some, not familiar. And I want to invite you as we do this to, you know, sometimes we've done it many times and it can be rather perfunctory, but actually to reflect on this idea of refuge, where we look to our refuge, where is a reliable refuge, more really see if you can bring the living spirit of it as we do these. So we'll chant together, call and response. Namo tassa, namo tassa, bhagavato, arahato, arahato, samma sambuddhassa, samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa, namo tassa, bhagavato, bhagavato, arahato, arahato, samma sambuddhassa, samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa, namo tassa, bhagavato, bhagavato, arahato, arahato, samma sambuddhassa, samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi, Dutiyampi, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi, Dutiyampi, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi, Dutiyampi, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi, Tatiyampi, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi, Tatiyampi, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Tatyampi, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. And now we'll take the precepts together. And again, I'll just say something briefly about them. So the precepts, there's a few people here. Some of you I've known, there's some people here I've known for years. Most of you I don't know at all, but I think just by definition, I feel pretty safe in pretty sure that all of us here are interested in how can we live in a way that creates less suffering for ourselves and others and creates more well-being for ourselves and others. And I bet that's true for all of us here. So when we think about, well, what are supports to help us do that? Well, there are a lot of supports. The practices we'll be doing on this retreat are supports in that. And Gil was talking about, shifting the way we relate to ourselves and our experience, finding ways to be less reactive and more wisely responsive, learning to open our hearts, quiet our minds, all of these qualities. And another important piece of it are, when we think of the precepts, they're actually trainings in and really specific guidelines that we undertake as a support. And actually more than a support. I would say, I want to invite you, if you haven't heard the precepts before, to, when you hear them, feel how that lands for you and what does it feel like if to have an intention or an aspiration to live, to actualize these in your life so we live deeply out of the spirit of these precepts. And so they're training, you could say, rules, guidelines. And the idea of these is not that you have to be perfect. So like the first precept I'll say a little more about in a moment is around non-harming. Well, it's not so much that we're going to embody them or manifest them so perfectly every moment. But if we keep them in our, we have an intention or an aspiration, and we try the, you do the best you can, right? And so we do our best to hold the spirit of them in our minds, perhaps sometimes, oftentimes consciously reflecting on them or just bringing them to mind when we need to as to help us. If we screw up or act in a way that's not so helpful and causes suffering, and we all do that, by definition, until we're Buddhas ourselves, there's places or at least potential of greed, hatred, and delusion in our minds. So it can happen. But then we can reflect back and recommit ourselves and let the precepts support us as we move forward. So we're going to take five precepts together. The first one traditionally is not killing, but we're going to take it as a precept of non-harming. And when you think about that, that's a big, big topic. That could be, it really deserves a lifetime of investigation and inquiry, I think. But of course, we don't want to kill any living creatures. If you see an insect, we want to respect all life. So there's the non-killing piece. But you may also want to, in the spirit of non-harming, and what's the flip side of non-harming is that non-harming is sort of the negation of, but there's also the positive of creating a place of safety and care, right? And so that may be how it manifests for you, bringing in that attitude and everything. When we actually take the precepts, so you'll have to make it your own. The way we'll take it is we'll just take, we're going to say it in English to undertake the precept of non-harming, that's the way we'll state it. second precept traditionally is not stealing, but in the context of the retreat here, I'd like for us to take it as not taking that which is not offered. So we're here on a retreat. We brought our own possessions here with us. And so, of course, part of the spirit is it means that we create a safety for each other. So if you bring whatever, you bring your purse here and you set it down beside you, and then you go out to walk, you know nobody's going to mess with your stuff. Right? There's a safety where it's part of the non-harming, too, nobody's going to take your purse, right? So we're creating that container for each other. Everybody's offering that as the gift for us, and we're offering it for others. But also it can expand in many, many different ways. It may be graciously accepting the food as it's offered, because that's what people, out of a sincerity of support and love, are offering. So there's a lot of, I want to keep it short, I won't say more, but really there's a lot there. And then the third is, if you're monastics, it's around celibacy and abstaining from sexual activity. As lay people, we tend to take it as a precept of being wise and careful around sexuality, because we know that how much it's a powerful force, right? In the spirit of the retreat, I want to invite us to take the precept of refraining from sexual activity, and we'll just say it in a simple way like that. The fourth precept is around wise speech, and in the context, which is also a huge topic, in the context of the retreat, we're going to keep it very simple. We've already said we're going to undertake the precept of noble silence. And the fifth precept is abstaining from intoxicants that can cloud our minds, and that it's not just abstaining, but part of it is that lead to heedlessness. Well, for the retreat here, I just want to keep it very simple. We'll just take the precept to abstain from intoxicants. It doesn't mean that you can see the retreat center offers caffeinated tea, for example, so that's up to you. It's not that you can't take any substances in your body, or if you have medicines, of course, you should do that. But it's about abusing drugs that do cloud our minds, and so we're not so clear, right? So that's what we're going to do together. We're going to take these precepts. The last piece I just want to mention about it is that we'll preface each one by just saying, as a support for my practice, and then we'll say it. But I want to say, you can think of the precepts as a support, but really, that's the words we'll use, but I like to take it on really as something more than something that supports me, but it's integral to, and it becomes a foundation of how I want to live. And so I want to just to offer that so you can reflect on how important are these to you, and how what a powerful support, and also how they really lend themselves as part of the refuge. You know, if we're looking for a place of greater well-being, acting in unskillful or unwholesome ways that creates harm is not a good strategy, right? And so actually, the more we can bring that wholesome intention around precepts, we create less harm, we create more well-being, but it actually helps to support that wholesome refuge. So let's do these together. It's going to be in English. We'll just do it as a call and response. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of non-harming. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of non-harming. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of not taking that which is not offered. I undertake the precept of not taking that which is not offered. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of abstaining from sexual activity. as a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of abstaining from sexual activity. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of noble silence. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of noble silence. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of abstaining from intoxicants. As a support for my practice, I undertake the precept of abstaining from intoxicants.